too much away. While the dwarf was gone, he took in more of the room, and his eye spotted the words "The Coombe Valley Codex" on the spine of a book half concealed in the paperwork. That bloody valley again, with added weirdness this time. Actually, Sybil had bought a copy along with most of the reading population of the city, and had dragged him along to look at that poor man's wretched picture in the Royal Art Museum. A painting with secrets? Oh, yes. And how come some mad young human artist 100 years ago knew the secret of a battle fought thousands of years before? Sybil said that the book claimed he'd found something on the battlefield, but it was haunted, and voices drove him to believe he was a chicken or something. When the mugs were brought in, with just a little spilled on Helm Clever's desk because his hand was shaking, Vimes said, "I must see Greg Hamcrusher, sir." "I'm sorry, that is not possible." The answer came out flat and level, as if the dwarf had been practising. But there was a flicker in his eyes, and Vimes glanced up at a very large grill in the wall. At this point, Angua gave a little cough. "Okay," thought Vimes, "someone's listening." "Mr. Helm Clever," he said, "I have reason to suppose that a serious crime has been committed on Ankh-Morpork soil," he added. "That is to say, under it. But Ankh-Morpork's anyway." Once again, Helm Clever's strange calm gave him away. There was a hunted look in his eyes. "I'm sorry to hear it. How may I assist you to solve it?" "Oh, well," thought Vimes, "I did say I don't play games." "By showing me the dead body you have downstairs," he said. He was obscenely pleased at the way Helm Clever deflated. Time to press home. He took out his badge. "My authority, Mr. Helm Clever. I will search this place. I would prefer to do so with your permission." The dwarf was trembling with fear or anxiety, or probably both. "You will invade our premises. You cannot. Dwarf law. This is Ankh-Morpork," said Vimes. "All the way to the top, all the way to the bottom. Invasion is not the issue." "Are you really telling me I cannot search a basement? Now take me to Greg Hamcrusher, or whoever is in charge, now." I refuse your request." "It wasn't a request." And now we reach our own little Coombe Valley, Vimes thought, as he stared into Helm Clever's eyes. No backing down. We both think we're right, but he's wrong. A movement made him glance down. Helm Clever's trembling finger had teased out the spilled coffee into a circle. As Vimes stared, the dwarf's fingers drew two lines across the circle. He looked back up, his eyes bulging with anger, fear, and just a hint of something else. "Ah, Commander Vimes, is it?" said a figure in the doorway. It might have been Lord Vetinari speaking. It was that same level tone indicating that he had noticed you and you were, in some small way, a necessary chore. But it was coming from another dwarf, presumably, although he wore a rigid, pointed black hood which brought him up to the height of the average human. Elsewhere, he was completely shrouded, and that was a well-chosen word, in overlapping black leather scales, with just a narrow slit for the eyes. Were it not for the quiet authority of the voice, the figure in front of Vimes could be mistaken for a very sombre Hogswatch decoration. "And you are?" said Vimes. "My name is Ardent, Commander. Helm Clever, go about your chores." As the daylight face scuttled off at speed, Vimes turned in his seat and allowed his hand to brush across the sticky symbol, wiping it out. "And do you want to be helpful too?" he said. "If I can be," said the dwarf. "Please follow me. It would be preferable if the sergeant did not accompany you." "Why?" "The obvious reason," said Ardent. "She is openly female."
"What? So?"
"Sergeant Angua is very definitely not a dwarf," said Vimes. "You can't expect everyone to conform to your rules."
"Why not?" said the dwarf. "You do. But could we just, together for a moment, proceed to my office and discuss matters?"
"I'll be fine, sir," said Angua. "It's probably the best way." Vimes tried to relax. He knew he was letting himself get steamed up, those silent watchers in the street had got through to him, and the look he'd gotten from Helmclever needed some thinking about. But no, he said. You will not make that small concession. I am already making several big ones, believe me, said Vimes. The hidden eyes under the pointy cowl stared at him for a few seconds. Very well, said Ardent. Please follow me. The dwarf turned and opened a door behind him, stepping into a small square room. He beckoned them to follow, and when they were inside, pulled a lever. The room shook gently, and the walls began to rise. This is, Ardent began. An elevator, said Vimes. Yes, I know. I saw them when I met the Low King in Uberwald. The dropping of the name did not work. The Low King is not respected here, said Ardent. I thought he was the ruler of all dwarfs, said Vimes. A common misconception. Ah, we have arrived. The elevator stopped with barely a jerk. Vimes stared. Ankh-Morpork was built on Ankh-Morpork. Everyone knew that. They had been building with stone here 10,000 years ago. As the annual flooding of the Ankh brought more silt, so the city had risen on its wall until attics had become cellars. Even at basement level today, it was always said, a man with a pickaxe and a good sense of direction could cross the city by knocking his way through underground walls, provided he could also breathe mud. What had this place been? A palace? The temple of a god who'd subsequently slipped everyone's memory? It was a big space, dark as soot, but there was a glow that managed to show beautiful vaulting in the roof above. A strange glow. Worms, said Ardent, from the deep caves in the mountains around Chlamedos. We brought them with us, and they breed very fast here. They find your silt quite nourishing. I am sure they shine more, too. The glow moved. It did not illuminate much, but it showed the shape of things, and it was heading toward the elevator, flowing over the wonderful ceiling. They head for heat and movement even now, said the hooded dwarf. Why? Ardent gave a little laugh. In case you die, Commander. They think you are some rat or small deer that has tumbled into their cave. Nourishment is rare in the deeps. Every breath you exhale is food, and when eventually you expire, they will descend. They are very patient. They will leave nothing but bones. I was not intending to expire here, said Vimes. Of course not. Follow me, please, said Ardent, leading them past a big round door. There were more doors on the other side of the room and several gaping tunnel mouths. How far down are we? Not far, about 40 feet. We are good at digging. In this city, said Vimes, why aren't we trying to breathe underwater? And calling it water is giving it the best of it. We are very good at keeping water out, too. Alas, it appears we are less good at keeping out Samuel Vimes. The dwarf stepped into a smaller room, its ceiling thick with brilliant worms, and motioned to a couple of dwarf-sized chairs. "Do sit down. Can I offer you refreshment?" "No, thank you," said Vimes. He sat down gingerly on a chair that brought his knees up almost to his chin. Ardent sat down behind a small desk made of stone slabs, and to Vimes's amazement took off his headgear. He looked quite young, with a beard that was actually trimmed. Angua watched him, breathing slowly. "How far do all these tunnels run?" Vimes said. "I don't propose to tell you," said Ardent levelly. "So you're undermining my city?" "Oh, Commander! You've been to the caves in Uberwald. You've seen how dwarfs can build. We are craftsmen. Do not think that your house is about to collapse." "But you're not just building basements. You're mining," said Vimes. "In a sense, we would say we are mining for holes. Space Commander is what we are digging for. Yes, we are mining for holes. Although our bores have found deep treacle, you'll be interested to hear." "You can't do this." "Can we not? But we are doing it nevertheless," said Ardent calmly. "You are burrowing under people's property." "Rabbits burrow, Commander. We dig, and yes, we are. How far down does ownership go after all, and how far up?" Vimes looked at the dwarf. "Calm down," he thought. "You can't deal with this. This is too big. It's something for veterinari to decide. Stick to what you know. Stick to what you can deal with." "I'm investigating reports of a death," he said. "Yes, Greg Hamcrusher. A terrible misfortune," said Ardent, with a calmness that was enraging. "I've heard it was a vicious murder." "That would be a fair description." "You admit it," said Vimes. "I'll choose to assume that by that you mean, do I admit there has been a murder, Commander?" "Yes, there has, and we are dealing with it."
"How?"
"We are discussing the appointment of a Zadkrudga," said Ardent, folding his hands. "That is, one who smelts, one who finds the pure ore of truth in the dross of confusion."
"Discussing? Have you sealed off the scene of the crime yet?"
"The smelter may order that, Commander, but we already know that the crime was committed by a troll." Ardent's face now bore an expression of amused contempt that Vimes longed to remove. He said,
"How do you know this? Was it witnessed?"
"Not as such, but a troll's club was found beside the body," said the dwarf.
"And that's all you have to go on?" Vimes stood up. "I've had enough of this. Sergeant Angua."
"Sir,"
said Angua beside him, "let's go. We're going to find the murder scene while there's still any clues left to find."
"You have no business in the lower areas," snapped Ardent, standing up.
"How are you going to stop me?"
"How are you going to get past locked doors?"
"How are you going to find out who murdered Hamcrusher?"
"I told you, a troll's club was found."
"And that's it? We found a club so a troll did it? Is anyone going to believe that? You're prepared to start a war in my city with a piece of flim-flam like that? Because believe me, that's what's going to happen when this gets out. Try it, and I'll arrest you."
"And start a war in your city," said Ardent.
Dwarf and man glared at one another while they caught their breath. On the ceiling above them, Vermes congregated, feasting on spittle and rage.
"Why would anyone but a troll strike down the Grag?" said Ardent.
"Good. You're asking questions." Vimes leaned across the desk. "If you really want answers, unlock those doors."
"No, you cannot go down there. Blackboard monitor, Vimes."
The dwarf could not have put more venom in the words child murderer. Vimes stared. Blackboard monitor. Well, he had been, in that little street school more than 45 years ago. Mum had insisted. Gods knew where she'd sprung the penny a day it cost, although most of the time Dame Slightly had been happy to accept payment in old clothes and firewood, or preferably gin. Numbers, letters, weights, measures. It was not what you'd call a rich curriculum. Vimes had attended for 9 months or so, until the streets demanded he learn much harder and sharper lessons. But for a while he'd been trusted to hand out the slates and clean the blackboard. Oh, the heady, strutting power of it when you're 6 years old.
"Do you deny it?" said Ardent. "You destroy written words. You admitted as much to the Lord King in Uberwald."
"It was a joke," said Vimes.
"Oh, then you do deny it."
"What? No. He was impressed by my titles, and I just threw that one in for fun."
"Then you deny the crime," Ardent persisted.
"Crime? I cleaned the blackboard so that new things could be written on it. How is that a crime?"
"You did not care where those words went," said Ardent.
"Care? They were just chalk dust."
Ardent sighed and rubbed his eyes.
"Busy night," said Vimes.
"Commander, I understand that you were young and may not have realized what you were doing, but you must understand that to us you appear to be proud of being complicit in the most heinous of crimes, the destruction of words."
"Sorry, rubbing out 'A is for apple' is a capital crime, one that would be unthinkable for a true dwarf," said Ardent.
"Really? But I have the trust of the Low King himself," said Vimes.
"So I understand. There are 6 venerable grags below us, Commander, and in their eyes the Low King and his kind have strayed from the true seam.
"He is," Ardent rattled off a sentence, in staccato dwarfish, too fast for Vimes to catch it, and then translated, "wishy-washy, dangerously liberal, shallow. He has seen the light." Ardent was watching him carefully. "Think hard. From what Vimes could remember, the Low King and his circle had been pretty crusty types. But these people think they're soppy liberals." "Wishy-washy," he said. "Indeed. I invite you, therefore, to derive from that statement something of the nature of those I serve below." "Ah," thought Vimes, "there's something there, just a hint. Friend Ardent is a thinker. When you say, 'he has seen the light,' you sound as if you mean corrupted," he said. "Something like that, yes. Different worlds, Commander. Down here it would be unwise to trust your metaphors. To see the light is to be blinded. Do you not know that in the darkness the eyes open wider?" "Take me to see these people down below," said Vimes. "They will not listen to you. They will not even look at you. They have nothing to do with the world above. They believe it is a kind of bad dream. I have not dared tell them about your newspapers, printed every day and discarded like rubbish. The shock would kill them." "But dwarfs invented the printing engine," Vimes thought. "Obviously they were the wrong kind of dwarf. I've seen Cheery throw stuff in a waste paper basket, too. It seems like nearly all dwarfs are the wrong sort, eh?" "What exactly is your job, Mr. Ardent?" said Vimes. "I am their chief liaison with the world above. The steward, you could say." "I thought that was Helmclever's job." "Helmclever? He orders the groceries, relays my orders, pays the miners and so on. The chores, in fact," said Ardent disdainfully. "He is a novice, and his job is to do what I tell him. It is I who speak to the Grags." "You talk to bad dreams on their behalf." "You could put it that way, I suppose. They would not let a proud word-killer become a smelter. The idea would be abominable." They glared at one another. "Once again we end up in Coombe Valley," Vimes told himself. "They won't—" "Permission to make a suggestion," said Angua quietly. Two heads turned. Two mouths said, "Well?" "The smelter, the seeker of the truth, must they be a dwarf?" "Of course," said Ardent. "Then what about Captain Carrot? He's a dwarf." "We know of him. He is an anomaly," said Ardent. "His claim to dwarfishness is debatable. But most dwarfs in the city accept that he's a dwarf," said Angua. "And he's a copper, too." Ardent flopped back into his seat. "To your dwarfs here, yes, he is a dwarf. He would be unacceptable to the Grags. There's no dwarf law that says a dwarf can't be more than 6 feet tall, sir." "The Grags are the law, woman," Ardent snapped. "They interpret laws that go back for tens of thousands of years." "Well, ours don't," said Vimes. "But murder is murder anywhere. The news has got out. You've already got the dwarfs and the trolls simmering nicely, and this will bring it all right to the boil. Do you want a war?" "With the trolls? That is—" "No. With the city. A place inside the walls where the law doesn't run. His lordship won't accept that one." "You would not dare," said the dwarf. "Look into my eyes," said Vimes. "There are far more dwarfs than there are watchmen," said Ardent, but the amused expression had fled. "So what you are telling me is that law is just a matter of numbers," said Vimes, standing up. "I thought you dwarfs practically worshipped the idea of law. Is numbers all it is? I'll swear in more men, then. Trolls, too. They're citizens just like me. Are you sure every dwarf is on your side? I'll raise the regiments. I'll have to. I know how things are run in Llamedos and Uberwald, but they are not run like that here. One law, Mr. Ardent, that's what we've got. If I let people slam their front door on it, I might as well shut down a watch." Vimes walked to the doorway. "That's my offer. Now I'm going back to the yard." "Wait!" Ardent sat, staring at the desktop, drumming his fingers on it. "I do not have
"Seniority here," he said. "Let me talk to your grags. I promise to rub out no words." "No, they will not talk to you. They do not talk to humans. They are waiting below. They had a tunnel mouth, but this one had a piece of board nailed across it." He pulled out his sword, yelled, "I wonder what's down here," smashed the board, and set off down the tunnel with Angua following.
"Is this wise, sir?" she whispered as they plunged along.
"No, but I've had it up to here with Mr. Ardent," Vimes growled. "I'll tell you, another twisty tunnel, and I'll be back here with the heavy mob, politics or not."
"Calm down, sir."
"Well, everything he says and does is an insult. Makes my blood boil," said Vimes, striding onwards and ignoring the shouts of Ardent behind him.
"There's a door ahead, sir."
"All right, I'm not blind. Just half-blind," Vimes snapped. He reached out. The big round door had a wheel in its centre, and dwarf runes chalked all over it. "Can you read them, sergeant?"
"Mortal danger, flooding, no entry," said Angua.
"More or less, sir."
"They're pressure doors. I've seen these used before in other mines."
"Chained shut, too," said Vimes, reaching out. "Looks like solid iron. Ow!"
"Sir?
Gash my hand on a nail." Vimes rammed his hand into a pocket where, without fail, Sybil saw to it that a clean handkerchief was lodged on a daily basis.
"A nail? In an iron door, sir?" said Angua, looking closely.
"A rivet, then. Can't see a thing in this gloom. Why, they—"
"You must follow me. This is a mine. There are dangers," said Ardent, catching up with them.
"You still get flooding?" said Vimes.
"It is to be expected. We know how to cope. Now stay close to me."
"I'll be more inclined to do that, sir, if I thought we were taking a direct route," said Vimes. "Otherwise I might look for shortcuts."
"We are nearly there, Commander," said Ardent, walking away. "Nearly there."
Aimless and hopeless, the troll wandered. His name was Brick, although currently he couldn't remember this. His head ached. It really ached.
"It was the scrape that did it. What did they always say? When you sink into where you was cooking up scrape, you was so low, even the cockroaches had to bend down to spit on you."
"Last night, what had been happening? What bits did he see? What bits did he do? What bits in the thumping, scalding cauldron of his brain were real? The bit with the giant woolly elephants, they probably weren't real. He was pretty sure there weren't any giant woolly elephants in this city, because if there were, he would have seen them before, and there'd be big steaming turds in the streets and similar. You wouldn't miss them."
He was called Brick because he'd been born in the city, and trolls, being made of metamorphorical rock, often take on the nature of the local rocks. His hide was a dirty orange with a network of horizontal and vertical lines. If Brick stood up close to a wall, he was quite hard to see. But most people didn't see Brick anyway. He was the kind of person whose mere existence is an affront to common decency.
"That mine with them dwarfs, was that real? You go and find a place to lie down and watch the pretty pictures. Suddenly you're in this dwarf hole. That couldn't have been real. Only word on the street was that some troll had got into a dwarf hole, yeah? And everyone was looking for that troll and not to shake him by the hand. The word said the Breccia wanted to find out real hard, and by the sound of it they was not happy. Not happy that some dwarf who'd been put into bad word on the cleanse was offed by a troll. Were they mad? Actually, it didn't matter if they was mad or not, because they had ways of asking questions that didn't heal for months. So he better be keeping out of their way. On the other hand, a dwarf wouldn't know one troll from another, right? And no one else had seen him, so act normal, right? He'd be fine. He'd be fine. Anyway, it couldn't have been him."
It occurred to Brick, "Yeah, that's my name, knew it all the time," that he still had a bit of the white powder at the bottom of the bag. All he needed to do now was find a startled pigeon and some alcohol, any alcohol at all, and he'd be fine. Yeah, fine. Nothing to worry about at all. Yeah. When Vimes stepped out into the brilliant daylight, the first thing he did was draw a deep breath. The second thing he did was draw his sword, wincing as his sore hand protested. Fresh air, that was the stuff. He'd felt quite dizzy down there, and the tiny cut on his hand itched like mad. He'd better get Igor to take a look at it. You could probably catch anything in the muck down there. Oh, that was better. He could feel himself cooling down. The air down there had made him feel really strange. The crowd was a lot more like a mob now, but he saw at the second glance that it was what he had thought of as a plum-cake mob.
It doesn't take many people to turn a worried, anxious crowd into a mob. A shout here, a shove there, something thrown here, and with care, every hesitant, nervous individual is being drawn into a majority that does not, in fact, exist. Detritus was still standing like a statue, apparently oblivious to the growing din. But Ringfounder, damn, he was arguing hotly with people at the front of the crowd. You never argued, you never got drawn in.
"Corporal Ringfounder," he bellowed, "to me."
The dwarf turned as a half-brick sailed over the heads of the mob and clanged off his helmet. He went over like a tree. Detritus moved so fast that he was halfway through the crowd before the dwarf hit the cobbles. His arm dipped into the press of bodies and hauled up a struggling figure. He spun around, thudded back through the gap that hadn't had time to close yet, and was beside Vimes before Ringfounder's helmet had stopped rolling. "Well done, Sergeant," said Vimes out of the corner of his mouth. "Did you have a plan for the next bit?"
I'm more the tactical kind, sir," said Detritus.
"Oh, well. At times like this you didn't argue, and you didn't step back." Vimes pulled out his badge and held it up. "This dwarf is under arrest for assaulting a watch officer," he shouted. "Let us through in the name of the law." And to his amazement, the crowd went quiet, like a lot of children when they sense that this time the teacher is really, really angry. Perhaps it was the words on the badge, he thought. You couldn't rub them out. In the silence, another half-brick dropped out of the free hand of the dwarf in Detritus' very solid custody. Years later, Vimes would shut his eyes and still be able to recall the crunch it made when it hit the ground. Angua stood up, with the unconscious Ringfounder in her arms. "He's concussed," she said, "and I suggest, sir, that you turn around just for a moment." Vimes risked a glance. Ardent, or at least a leather-shrouded dwarf that could have been him, was standing in the shadows of the doorway. He had the attention of the crowd. "We're being allowed to go," he said to Angua, nodding to the figure. "I think the going is the thing, sir, don't you?"
"You've got that right, Sergeant. Detritus, keep a grip on that little bugger. Back to the Nick, all of us."
The crowd parted to let them through with barely a murmur. The silence followed them all the way back to the watchhouse, where Otto Treke of the Times was waiting in the street, iconograph at the ready.
"Oh, no, you don't, Otto," said Vimes as his squad approached.
"I'm standing on the public highway, Mr. Vimes," said Otto meekly. "Smile, please."
And he took a picture of a troll officer holding a dwarf up in the air. "Oh, well," said Vimes to himself, "that's page one sorted out, and probably the bloody cartoon too." One dwarf in the cells, one in the tender, loving care of Igor, Vimes thought as he trudged up the stairs to his office. And it's only going to get worse. Those dwarfs were obeying Ardent, weren't they? What would they have done if they